All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Vic Life Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about life and faith from a Brethren in Christ perspective. My name is Ryan Stockton, and I'm joined as usual by my good friend Scott McPheat. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, pretty good. How are you doing, Ryan?
Excellent. Excellent. I'm really excited for this episode today. We are joined by yet another Ryan. If you listened to a previous episode, Ryan joined us before talking about what do we talk about? Silence, mm-hmm. Right? And adding to the noise, I think, is what we called that episode, episode 3 or something like that. It's going back a ways, back in the early days, even though we're only like a year.
Highly recommend you go back and listen to Ryan Cagno's, just, you know, what he brought to the table was just so good.
That was great. It was great. But
No, nothing. Go ahead, Ryan.
What I will say is we do recommend going back and listening. Ryan Cagno does a podcast for his church, Harrisburg Brethren in Christ. And what's the podcast called? Just HBIC?
It's just the HBIC podcast. It's in the same stream as our sermon recordings, where we do like a discipleship weekly every week.
Right, right.
Where we interview someone from the congregation about anything related to discipleship, which is a lot of things. Practical following of Jesus or sometimes batting around a topic.
I searched for it on Google Podcasts, just HBIC podcast.
Yep. Had Babe in charge.
It came right up.
Oh, it did. Okay,
it
good.
Did. Yeah.
There is another HBIC out there, but
it was yours. So,
the episode that we're talking about specifically that Ryan did for the HBIC podcast, he spoke with someone and they had a fantastic conversation surrounding the conflict with Israel and Hamas and all that's going on in Gaza, that whole conflict there. So we really recommend you go and check that out. It's a really great listen. So the HBIC podcast, it was really good. So definitely check that out. Ryan,
October 13th, I think. Episode
October 13th was the date. Awesome. So yeah, go check that out. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time here. So we wanted to talk not just about your other podcast, but about some of the work that you're doing for the denomination, specifically for the Atlantic Conference, in a ministry called Next Gen. Can you explain what that is for us?
Yeah, Next Gen Ministries is a ministry within the Atlantic Conference focused on identifying, equipping, and empowering the next generation of VIC ministers. Typically, over the past 15 years or so of this ministry's life, I think longer than that now, the bread and butter of the ministry has been ministry internships, so paid internships within Atlantic Conference churches. We've done other things throughout the history of the internship. Conferences, kind of like parachurch young adults event and things like that. Bread and butter has typically been internships, and we're kind of exploring in this season other things, other ways that the next gen can be involved in promoting the empowerment of the next generation here.
Hmm. And how do you find the interns? Like, do they just come to you, or are you constantly just like putting feelers out? Hey, everybody, let us know if you got someone. Or
it's a mix. I think in the past there were pretty robust pipelines from Messiah, Lebanon, or Lancaster Bible, places like that. Mm. In the past, where you had ministry majors, whoever it might be, kind of coming out and getting plugged in with churches. Not so much the case currently for a variety of reasons. And I've been pounding the bricks with colleges and with E-Town and Franklin and Marshall and Hack and tons of places. And for a variety of reasons, maybe it's post-COVID or otherwise, that part's been a little bit more challenging. We're getting interns from other churches where they emerge from the church. So that's been a lot of the interns. I've connected with some InterVarsity chapters and folks and found interns through that. We keep our eyes open in that regard in terms of, equal opportunity where interns are coming from.
Yeah. I know, a couple years ago when I've had two people go through the Next Gen program. This is before you were the director, but
people from your church who went through the program, or
no,
you had interns at your church?
I've had interns at my church.
Okay.
Now one was recommended by the person that was in that's doing what Ryan does now. The other one I actually brought to the table. I graduated from Lancaster Bible College. I know some professors there. I just reached out and was like, hey, do you know anybody that would want to like do a 3 month, 4 month internship in student ministry here at our church? And they actually had someone that was interested. And so I connected this person, our intern, with the Next Gen program. And then that's how we worked it out.
Yeah. And that it's great to hear that that happened for you guys. You know, for a variety of reasons that I won't get into on a podcast, in some of these different colleges, there's just, it's been a little bit more challenging. That pipeline's not as wide and robust as it was, for whatever reason. Personally, I take it as a bit of an opportunity to, rethink what exactly, you know, Next Gen is, the pool of people we're pulling from. You know, I think you could map it over like, employment trends for college students and young adults anyways, and just the paths people are taking to ministry are getting less and less linear. So as that pipeline hasn't been as robust, I've kind of thought through, well, you know, it might just be the case that less and less as years go by are interns going to be like, hey, I'm this bright-eyed and bushy-tailed 21-year-old ministry major ready to
right.
do it in a church, you know? I mean, think about ourselves and how we got to the places we are in ministry and stuff. For myself, at least, you know, looking beyond the pool of, you know, undergrads to see where that next generation is coming from, I think would behoove us for a host of reasons.
Yeah. I've often thought like, and obviously if I had a great idea, I would have already talked to you, but, you know, but I have thought like, I wonder if we could like encourage the teens we have in our own churches more. Like I brought up, I think it was last year.
Whoa.
I brought it up during a
let me write
a
that down, Scott.
I know, seriously. This is earth shattering stuff. You know, get your notepad out. I was leading a lesson at student ministry last year, and I brought up the fact that, hey, you know, like it seems like y'all have ideas what you want to do after high school. And I'm talking to middle schoolers and high schoolers at this point. And none of them mentioned ministry. And I said, you know, that is an option. We actually have a great college right down the street. There's other options out there that you go to. And ministry it doesn't always look like what I do. Like, if you don't want to do what I do, great. But we also talked about the fact that, like, you know, ministry happens wherever you are, whether you're a truck driver or a, you know, CEO of a big company, you know, ministry happens there. But yeah, it was pretty evident that ministry had never occurred to them at all. So, yeah.
And if our BIC forebears from 70 plus years ago could listen in on this podcast, and maybe some of them will, people that are old enough to remember the shift into the professionalization of ministry, that used to not be a foregone conclusion. You know, we took that change very seriously as a denomination. It used to be that we didn't have paid ministers, and it wasn't because we were frugal. It was because we really thought, wow, this is going to disenfranchise a whole host of other people. And you said kind of two things there, Scott. Like, on one hand, they couldn't envision like themselves doing professional ministry as a life. And so in part, we want to like cast that vision for them of like, that is a possibility for you. On the other hand, there's like a deprogramming that we need to do of ministry. Does not necessarily need to look like you pursue this as a 40, 50 hour a week, full-time vocation. I think both of those things are happening there in what you said.
Yeah.
What's been your experience working with, have you worked with many seminaries? Has that also been difficult, or are there even?
I haven't yet. I mean, so there's like LTS, like, or Lancaster Theological Seminary, Evangelical Seminary. That's on the, radar of things. But let me make excuses for myself. I'm working my way through things, and I
No,
haven't.
no worries, man.
No,
No
I was
worries.
just curious because, yeah, I mean, you were talking about our own paths to ministry. You know, that professional full-time vocational ministry is a second career for me. And I say second career, it's probably more like seventh or eighth career after all the different things that I've tried in my life. But yeah, I came to professional paid pastoring later. And so, you know, and I went to seminary later, and all that. And, you know, if I had been in college, even though I had led worship in some different settings and had some sort of, you know, experience with some of those areas, I wouldn't have considered a ministry internship because that wasn't my thing. I was a theater major. I wanted to not get paid doing other things. But yeah, like it was later on that I started feeling like, oh, maybe this is something I should be doing, and this is where God is taking me on this journey. But
Now our internships are paid. I want to say that they
oh,
are
your
paid.
internships are paid. Oh, well then
Yeah.
there maybe
They
I
are
would have considered it then because
definitely. They definitely almost cover the gas required to get to the place you're.
Yeah, it's not a lot. And I mean, I don't know if it's different now, but from my experience, NextGen covered 50% and then our church covered 50%. But for 4 months, it's not like, oh man, yeah, I don't have to do anything else or whatever. It's not gonna pay the bills, like
Yeah, there's a tension sometimes where there's some folks where you should just be like a hire, like the slot where like the paid internship and what we're offering. Like if you're a seminarian with like a family, I'm like, I don't know, you maybe should just like be getting a job. But where the internship helps is that it's like a proving ground, or like it's a nice way to dip your toes in the water and for you to feel out of church and a church to feel out you. So in that regard, yeah, I mean, I did a internship when I was in seminary. As well. I kind of just and I needed an internship for seminary, and so I reached out and did it. But I've actually been an intern at least two times, at least two different like specific stints of being an intern. But yeah, that's I explore all those avenues. I explore colleges, I will explore seminaries. At the same time, my approach a little bit is conditioned by a theological conviction that any given local church like has what they need right now to like faithfully minister and follow Jesus where they are. I think there's a lot of times where an outside person or presence can come in and inject new life and energy into a place. That does happen. And it's great. I think sometimes we hang our hopes on that, to the neglect of the people that are in our context currently. So, it's not to cop out from the recruitment aspect of my job, but I am trying to get to the point with NextGen where the recruitment part of my job is obsolete or unnecessary. And I often try and turn conversations back towards pastors of like, who are you seeing in your context? Because I think like in almost every case, there are people in your context that are, have been made and called to do more than what they're currently doing. And so let's explore that, how we can invest in that. And if they're not, then it's because there are some deeper level discipleship. Things going on at your church to where like maybe there's there are harder conversations we need to have. If you're looking around and say, man, I don't see anyone with spirit-given potential to like lead in a higher capacity there, that's a harder conversation maybe. But in general, I think like you have who you need, so how can we rally around, how can we identify those people and kind of empower them and invest in them more?
That's really good. Part of what you were saying earlier about the professionalization, moving towards a professionalization of ministry, I feel like me as a pastor and other people in pastoral ministry, and Scott, I'm not going to speak for you, but having someone then a part of who kind of leads a ministry in our conference called Next Gen Ministries, I then let you be the professional in that. I might be who people have foisted the responsibility of ministry onto in my local church context, but then on a denominational level, I foist the responsibility on to you. And I like your emphasis on turning it back around to the churches and saying, listen, we've got people in the churches. Recruitment is kind of like letting the professionals find the people. Let them do it for us. If they've got a shining star, we'll take it. But let them do the work, but you turning it around, I think rightly turning it around to the churches to say, how are we developing our own people that are right in front of us? You're talking about discipleship in churches. Like that's it, how can you, it's a much more ready supply. We've got people in our churches right now. And what are we doing as pastors if not training up and developing our replacements, if you will. So I don't want to sound as simplistic as that, but I like Ryan, that mindset shift. I like that a lot better.
And I should hasten to say, like, I am a transplant into the BIC because of a next gen internship. So I don't want to discount the value of that. Like,
Oh, sure.
I'm here because of, but that was, a local pastor developed a relationship with a local college, and then he invited me to. Through a relationship, I came to like help at a youth group, and then the rest is history, right? So that does happen. We do need to see new people coming into the BIC, but we also, it wouldn't hurt to keep our current people or to invest in them more and to have them, be empowered more than they are. So
No,
that's
for
where
sure.
I'm at with it. And I'm not, yeah, I don't want to be a means by which people outsource their responsibility to have their eyes open in the next generation. I am not, Next Gen Ministries is not a parachurch young adult ministry for the Atlantic Conference or a parachurch college outreach or whatever it may be. Like that's not what I'm here to do. The perfect Next Gen internship is someone identifies an internal candidate. They want to empower them. I help bring structure, accountability, and money to that scenario. But that person is building a relationship with their local supervisor, and their local church. And that relationship will be durable and sustainable and will lead to like lifelong ministry. That's the perfect next gen internship where I'm like over here checking in saying, things good. Things good, great. I barely know this person. I'm not their like resource and foundation. They are growing ingrained into the local church. That's the goal. That's the ideal.
I like
Yeah,
that.
that's great. So that's a you're so Next Gen is a denominational level, well, Atlanta Conference level support system for local churches that want to disciple and train up their folks.
That's my vision, yeah, and we're kind of trying to move the ship towards that and or explore what that looks like, because that is a
Yeah.
big shift, but
Just speaking as a pastor, it's like I have to keep that in my mind. You know what I mean? Because if I'm I don't know, Sunday to Sunday, man, it's like a train that just doesn't stop and it's on one path and things pass you by so quickly that you don't we as pastors don't always think about that kind of thing. So I'm thinking about my, past decade of ministries, especially in my youth ministry years, and all those kids that like, what could I have done differently? Which there's definitely a bunch of things I could have done differently, but to more intentionally train them up, disciple them in such a way that it's like, you know, as a follower of Jesus, no matter what you choose to do, you're representing him. I think I obviously taught that, but like, there was always a disconnect of like, yeah, but you know, you could also like, you know, do this on the professional level too. There are Bible colleges out there. So, but anyway, it's just something to, you know, now as I sit in this chair, I'm thinking about it more. Most of our kids are middle school or younger. But I'm thinking about it, and I don't know the right way to, like, I don't know, present this stuff when they get a little older, but you know what
yeah.
I mean?
I think, yeah, I hear you on that idea of just like, you get carried week to week cycle and the urgency, the tyranny of the urgent and everything else. The reality is, and I know one question that you want to ask at some point, Ryan, so let's jump the gun and talk about it, is like, you know, what stands in the way of churches of, you know, investing in the next generation?
Yeah.
It's harder and it takes a lot longer to like empower someone to do something than to just do it yourself. And when Sunday's coming and the sermon needs to be written and whatever else, like, and I've had pastors tell me this, and I really respect that they've said, I don't have time to have an intern because I don't have the energy and the time to invest in, like, to really invest in that person and empower them. It takes longer and it's harder to train someone up than it is to just do it ourselves. Yeah. That's my best spin on why people don't. Mm-hmm. The less good spin is because we also don't want to cede that control to other people, mm-hmm. especially younger people. But mm-hmm. It's a mindset shift for all of us in our churches to have a development mindset and a discipleship mindset as we're approaching other people. You know, we've talked about this at HPIC recently, you know, that the goal in any given ministry, any given program or event, like, what if we made it our primary goal, not just to like get the program off without a hitch, not to make the event happen, but to be developing the volunteers that are involved in like leading and carrying that event. Like, we're going to have our outreach. I hope it goes well. But as a pastor, my eyes are going to be primarily towards the volunteers I have involved and how I'm leading them in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think another difficulty, particularly as it relates to having interns come in, but not exclusive to that, is the fact that your church doesn't receive the immediate benefit of that person's development, and maybe not even that person's development ever. So, like, I think about my experience growing up and some of the opportunities I was given to fail. I'm not at that church anymore. I don't live in the same city anymore. And so I was given these opportunities, and what that church got in return was some bad times of leading worship, some poorly led Bible studies, some pretty lousy teaching moments. You know, that's what that church got in return. But I was being developed every step of the way. And I think that is a huge obstacle a lot of times, because when you're doing a program, an initiative, or whatever, you want to see the ROI, even if it's down the road. You know, you want to see the return on investment, even in a few years. Here's how this is going to help us. Well, the thing about developing young people, the next generation, is that you might not see that benefit at your church, even in a few years. You know, you're developing high schoolers who then go on to college and they may not come back. They move somewhere else, or college kids or whatever. And so I think that's also a real difficulty, is like, hey, we're not going to see the benefit from this. In fact, we're going to be paying the cost for the kingdom benefit that someone else receives later. And I think that really helps. We would be really helped if we had a broader kingdom mindset rather than here's how I can help this specific local church mindset.
Yeah. Can I jump in? I think that what you just said there, we need to have a broader mindset. I think that is huge, because So I've done this with a couple guys who are no longer here at our church. One was a next gen intern. One was actually on staff and, you know, spent time talking through like, well, how do you prepare your sermons? How do you know, literally helping them prepare mm-hmm. sermons and, you know, there, I've had a lot of, I'm sure sermons that, I probably wouldn't want to go back and listen to, you know, and but all everybody has that, you know, you kind of have to go through it. And it's super helpful when you have someone to help you through that. And so what I found with our church was I don't think anybody felt like, oh, you know, we got gypped this Sunday because, you know, this is only his first sermon ever. No, they were all so supportive and like what, you know, what they were witnessing was like, wow, you know, this guy, this kid's willing to get up there and do this. Like maybe I could do something, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's worth it. And both of them aren't here anymore. And yet both of them are still in ministry in some capacity and probably will be in the future, which, you know, we were just one stepping stone as a church on that, on their journey, which I think is pretty cool.
Mm. There's two things there I want to respond to as soon as I put on Barbie Unicorn Music Princess.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. Part three.
Also, that was fun too, by the way, like showing them how I put sermons together. I found it fun.
Yeah.
It took some time, but we just like, I think we scheduled an hour, hour and a half once a week. Okay, we're going to meet together. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like, let's blow out this whole sermon. I thought beforehand, before I met right. with them, I was like, okay, what are we going to do today? And I thought, well, what do I do? What do I normally do? What's my first step? Like mm-hmm. what steps do I take? So I just took one step and I would talk with them about that. But anyway,
that's cool.
So there were two things there. First on the return on investment. Thanks for explaining what ROI meant.
Yeah.
I thought we were talking about the outdoor sporting goods store, but
that's REI, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the joke. That was the
oh, okay.
Thing.
I'm good at jokes.
That was the joke. I don't travel in financial circles, so I had to do ROI real quick. That man, that type of thinking makes me angry. I mean, it's fair, and a lot of people think it. People in your church are not means to the end of achieving like kingdom results. Like they are the end, like the people are the work, right? Mm. So if they don't stick around to continue to contribute to the advancement of our ministry, like no, their development is the advancement of your ministry. Their discipleship is the work. So let's shift that first of all and say, and then yes, broader kingdom perspective, it also counts if they then go and serve in another church, right? That counts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It also counts if they go and serve as an assistant manager at Burger King, but they have been like, they are following Jesus more closely. Like that is the work and fruit of ministry. Mm. They are not means to an end.
Get
whether it's really good things, giving out more Thanksgiving baskets or whatever it is, like it's not, that's not the goal. And then, you know, also we do have to be patient with things getting a little weird and awkward at times because that is the work. Because, and maybe this is the same point, maybe it's not two things. The goal is not to put on a perfect Sunday morning experience.
Yep. Yeah.
The goal is to be built up together in love into the image and likeness of Christ and as his body. And so you need to let like some of those more awkward parts of the body get exercise. It's going to be weird. It's going to be uncomfortable. If you want a church, and if you want a church where the next generation, where any generation is involved and dynamically engaged in the life of the church, you better get used to awkward because it's going to be, you know.
As a youth pastor, I always said, awkward is awesome. I stole that from somewhere.
Stole it from somewhere.
Awkward is awesome.
Yeah, that's been a thing. Just a shout out, HBIC, the church that I'm at and love. Like, man, things get weird fast, and or things like get weird. Things just the baseline is just like, well, that happened. And you just have to embrace it. We did a last November we had Mission Sunday, and we did our offering, like you walk the offering up to the front or whatever. Like John Habaker came up and introduced this, and he said in a lot of other countries, this is how they present their offering. They kind of walk or like dance it up the aisles and put it in versus like
right,
you know, whatever. And he said he gave like loose instructions of how it should go. And then he said, but you know, it'll probably be a little chaotic. And then he said, but chaos is part of the heartbeat of this church, is what he said. Like introducing it. I was like, that man, I'm gonna get that as a tattoo.
Yeah, right.
But like, if you want to have more people involved in ministry, if the goal is, is engaging them, you have to up your tolerance for that, for just like things to get weird and chaotic. You have to be okay with it. And if you have a ministry model that's squeezing out awkward, then you should not be surprised at lower percentages of engagement in a whole host of ways. Certainly should not be surprised by lack of like young people engagement.
Yeah.
Because they are, I don't want to say they're awkward, but you know, we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has to preach that first sermon. Mm-hmm. And woof, am I right? I mean, really, yeah. I had my first sermon, I had like two Batman references. I posted a quote and picture of Steelers linebacker James Harrison.
Yeah.
At one point, just preach what you know.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
I just preached a sermon at my church recently that I had already preached at one time, and not at this particular church, but it was one of my earliest. It was from, I went back and I saw it was from 2014 that I preached it. It was, I think, the second or third sermon I ever preached. And I went in and the bones were good. I kept the structure and the bones and everything, but I cut probably three whole pages of typewritten script and had to tighten things up. And I'm just like, oh man, like I was allowed to preach this
yeah.
to people. And I was just like, oh my gosh. So yeah, I mean, none of it was bad. I wasn't necessarily embarrassed by the content, which is good, but it was boring. Like I said so much that just didn't need to be said. It was so like, and then I got to, I started a Celebrate Recovery ministry, which is a recovery program based on the 12 steps of AA. And I led that for a number of years. And the way that works structure wise is you teach on a recovery topic every other week. And in the intervening weeks is like a testimony of some kind. And so I was teaching every other week, and that's how I started doing that. And I would go back and I'd look at these things and they're just so long and so boring. I'm like, how in the world did anyone sit through this? It was terrible. So yeah, you need those reps. You need the times, and that's for preaching, but you need reps to kind of figure out who you are in ministry and what you're wanting to do and all that sort of thing. Cause yeah. So I just, you
Dude,
need
I wanna,
chaos listen, rain and awkwardness rain. You, absolutely.
Make you feel better. I would have taken boring as a result of those early sermons 10 times out of 10. I wish I had been boring. My goodness. I was just a flaming dumpster on a train car.
My first ministry, professional ministry experience, was between 2008 and 2011. I don't have any of those sermons. They're all gone. This is before we recorded them, before we live streamed them. Yeah. I don't even have the digital notes. Like, yeah. And I'm thankful.
God, praise
yeah.
God.
There's no record.
My one intern, the one intern I had here at Refton, His very first sermon is one of the first live streamed sermons that we had. So I feel bad for him. I mean, it was great. It was great, you know, but yeah. I also feel bad because it's like, as long as we have it up, it's like forever. It's
yeah,
forever
right.
there. Do you remember those days?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, it's like the reason why I'm glad there was no social media when I was in like junior high and high school and college. Like, that saved me. And so kind of like, I'm glad that the record of my early ministry stuff has kind of been expunged from the record.
My MySpace page is still out there somewhere.
Is it really?
I'm sure. I mean, I don't know how to find it, but I'm sure it's out
there. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, you know, I don't even know if I officially like canceled mine.
Probably right? not. It's probably still under your Hotmail email address.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
But we digress, I think, here.
Well, kind of, but not really, because right, like this is the stage of the people that we're looking to develop is when they are, where everything that they do is out there. Social media, recordings of church services being live streamed. And so they're dealing with a whole different layer of quote unquote pressure that we didn't have to in our initial stages of ministry. And so maybe not if it's like outside of a Sunday morning, maybe if it's like starting to facilitate a small group, you know, giving them some opportunities to facilitate small groups or facilitate a cares ministry, you know, in your church or organizing the meal train or something, just finding other ways for people to start dipping their toes into leadership, ministries of some kind. It doesn't all have to be Sunday morning type stuff that we typically think of, leading mm-hmm. musical worship or preaching on a Sunday or whatever. But there's a lot of pressure, you know, out there, particularly, and Ryan, what you were saying was really hitting me about embracing the chaos and how, you know, our church, the way we run things is pretty professional. Our band is really good. Our preacher is amazing.
I don't know. I've heard him.
But you know, we do things. Our
the
AV
guy named
guys
Ryan up there preaching away.
Yeah. Our AV guys are great, you know, and it just somebody. Our hospitality people are fantastic, and just so much of what we do. You
I
know,
think a lot of his congregation listens to this podcast, so that's what's going on right
we've
here.
We've got a few who listen, but you know, we do what we do is done really well, and there's a lot of that I really appreciate and really am all about. But on the other hand, Ryan, to your point, we've had some people be like, you know, yeah, I play an instrument, but I couldn't play with them, you know, and I couldn't do what you do, Ryan, you know, oh my gosh. And all those lighting people, I've looked back at that soundboard. There's a lot of lights. It looks like you're operating a spaceship back there. You know, so like it's cool. It's good. What we have is good. And I like it, and it's working. But is that squeezing people out of possible, like, we don't see a lot of failure on a Sunday morning, is what I'll say. We don't see people flub or mess up much, you know? And so how can we model that's actually okay? You know, and that's a question I'm not.
Self-sabotage, you know?
What was that?
Strategic self-sabotage.
Strategic self-sabotage. Yeah, man.
I don't think you need to purpose.
That'll be the episode title.
Yeah.
Strategic self-sabotage.
It's Sounds already good. Copyrighted. Saving that for my memoir. But you can have royalties. Half of a joke and half not. I don't think you need to purposefully make it awkward or less professional necessarily. Although it does... It is a little heartbreaking to hear. I've heard that before too. Like, oh, I could never XYZ. And there's some people that, should, if you're totally tone deaf and you're saying I could never get up there and then pray to the Lord that you never do. Right. But right. We want to start from the premise that we as a body, everyone has something to contribute here. You know, again, going back to this idea that we have what we need in this room right now, partly it's our, you know, in any church, inevitably our ministry offerings, quote unquote, are going to like be a limiting factor on people's involvement, because they might really not fit in, you know, any of the things that are currently going on, in which case we need to start from the individual and start from their gifting and say, well, God has ministry for you to do. What does that look like? And how do we as a church? You'll find the awkward will find you then, you know what I mean? I don't think you need to purposely, put people in situations that it's going to be weird. But, you know, if we are starting from people's giftings, starting from who people are and empowering them there, then we'll be pushed beyond our comfort zones, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also think like it's to our advantage as leaders in the church to not see ourselves as like so high up. Well, like we know what we're doing, you know, like we got this all under control, and whether things are going off without a hitch or there's all kinds of awkwardness, that kind of leadership style will stifle and sort of suppress those that would like to maybe help out or could, and just never thought about it. I think at the end of the day, if I don't know, Ryan, maybe you could, Ryan Cagno, if you could speak into this a little more, like, as a church, a local church body, we're all there together to build each other up, to build the Lord's kingdom, and even within our own communities, and to serve together. And but notice I'm saying together, like we're all on the same team. The pastor should not be like, oh, like the pastor's not the church, right? It's the people. You know, you might have the most amazing worship leader ever. Well, great, but like, let's not put them up on a pedestal. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're all those that are followers of Jesus, you know, we're all in the same playing field as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And maybe we need to take ourselves off pedestals at times. Yeah. This is why I don't preach very much, is because I'm so good at it that it discourages me from trying. if you're going to my church, you know, that's not the reason. This tank's awesome. We need to reclaim. I mean, it's just that we lost some of our ecclesia. Here's your $3 word. Our ecclesiological imagination, right? We've lost some of that in the turn to professionalization, in the sweep of the church growth movement.
So explain that. I explained ROI. You have to explain ecclesiastical imagination.
Ecclesiological.
Yeah,
I probably could go either way, I guess.
I think he just made it up.
Our imagination, our shared imagination of like what we think the church is, mm-hmm, and could be and what it looks like, right?
Yeah.
People are not, when they say like, I could never blah, 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 at your church, Ryan, that to some degree is a product of just like a lack of that imagination of like what this thing is and what this thing ought to be and could be, right? We've lost the image of the body as Paul delivered it to us. We've lost that sense of what the church is. And fair enough, because we go up there every Sunday under literal spotlights and chew up with sermon. I mean, I'm just going right at you guys because I'm not doing this all the time, but you know, half of our gathered time, we chew it up with like a monologue and like, you know, of course people imagine the pastors the church. Of course they do. So we have to fight that. And you know, I think a lot of my work in Next Gen, as I envision it, is helping adjust and expand those imaginations. You know, when I say, what about the people in your own congregation? When people ask me for an intern, that is part of trying to expand imaginations. When I say that, you know, the next generation is not necessarily a 22-year-old with a Bible degree ready to do ministry, That's expanding imagination. The next generation, there, listen, there are so many people in our churches that are doing so much good ministry work because they're like a, because they're a 38-year-old stay-at-home mother. There's a child just hacking up coughs in the background. I don't think you can hear that. Hopefully, can you hear that?
No worries.
Okay, you can edit that out. But because they're a 38-year-old stay-at-home mother who's doing so much and it has so much of value, they don't see, they don't have the imagination to see themselves as a minister of the gospel. The church doesn't see them as ministers of the gospel, but they're the next generation too. Mm-hmm. So is the second career person, whether they're hitting their second career in their 40s or their 60s or their 70s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're the next generation too. That's part of our imagination. I think we're going to get there naturally in some places as a church, just because there are pastors in our conference even who have had to adjust their imagination to what ministry life looks like in terms of embracing bivocationality. You know, I'm only a half-time pastor. Plenty of other folks are half-time pastors and are doing other things. That takes an adjustment of the imagination of what ministry looks like.
Yeah.
Who it involves.
Yeah. I love that word, imagination. It came up in a previous podcast that we, in several podcasts, just this, mm-hmm. this idea of imagination, not letting ourselves get stuck in the paradigms that have been presented to us, to be able to say, this could be anything. And where I may not see where I fit in this paradigm, but where do I fit in anything? Why, anywhere. I could do whatever I want and be a minister of the gospel in however I am and however God made me. And so I just love the word imagination and how that helps explode our current paradigms. I think it's great. It's a really good word there, man. So let's one more quick question here. So we're all pastors here, some of us full-time, some of us part-time. Let's say there's somebody listening to this podcast right now who is not a pastor. They don't have the quote-unquote authority or the position in their church to make some changes to the paradigm, to say, hey, you know what, we're going to embrace some chaos. We're going to do some of this. We're going to create an environment that is fertile for growing people. If you're not in that position of power in your church, but yet you feel like God is calling you to something, but there's not necessarily a specific slot for you the way your church is set up, what can you do? Do you just reach out to Ryan Cagno and say, hey, is there another church somewhere who's got a spot for me? Or like, what?
Jump ship. That's the answer.
What can you do if you're in that position?
My honest first answer, in the immortal words of Phil Knight, you know, just do it, right? I mean, just follow God's leading in that where you are would be my first answer. Not in a way that you're like subverting necessarily the mm-hmm. authority that you're under, but here's another imagination shift for us. Change in anything, but certainly in an organization like this or a church, is actually more likely to come from someone who's not in a position of power and authority. Like, you know, if we're talking movement and revival and like real substantial change, like a surprising amount of the time, it comes from someone who's like, I just started doing a thing, you know? And a lot of time the power and authority then catch up and say, oh, look at that thing. Yeah. And then like, you know, baptize it and invest in it. Yeah. Don't wait to the next generation. Do not wait for the current generation to like give you the keys. Mm. Just you be faithful now and just start doing it. Mm-hmm. And then take it for yourself.
But to that extent, like, you know, it might mean that, you know, you're feeling a call to invest in other singles, you know, like, and you're single yourself. There's not a whole lot going on at your church, and there's no room in your facility. There's no availability for you to have a thing at the church facility or whatever. And you've talked to your pastor and it's just like, they're like, yeah, sure. It sounds great, but nothing ever really happens. Maybe it means you do a thing at a local restaurant or a coffee shop or a bar or your house, even, you know, and you just start inviting people over. Like you can start to Ryan's point, just start doing it, you know, and you never know what God is going to do when you start stepping into what he's calling you to do. It doesn't necessarily have to be institutionally blessed at the at the outset.
Yeah. I think if you had that idea and your pastor said, don't do that, then maybe call me about it. If that's the answer you're getting, then maybe you should consider other options. But, you know, kind of casting a sympathetic line here to the pastors who are listening, like, we understand as people who exist within the bureaucracy to some degree, like, it's not very efficient. And a lot of times things aren't going to happen. And it's not for any other reason than just like, just there's a lot of things already happening. I would hope pastors would say, like, go with God. Do it. You have my blessing. And then as the person with the idea or the calling, don't take, if we're not ready to throw our full, you know, church weight behind it and put it at the top of the bulletin and whatever, don't take that as a rejection or a sense of like, maybe this isn't a thing we ought to do right now. I want to speak this word to people in my own church and be like, no, I want you to do it. I want you to feel empowered to go and do it. Not everything is going to be an official church thing, and not everything should be, because I think to the degree we have to make things official church things, we're kind of undercutting the scope of the Spirit's work in the church.
Yeah, there's a couple things there. Like, you can't, no local church, no matter how large, can't do like everything, you know, because then you're just going to be doing a lot of things sort of half.
Not as the institution. Yeah.
Right. But man, there's a whole lot of value behind like going to your leadership at your church and saying, hey, I had this idea. I really feel like maybe there's something here, and if, and they can get behind it and like sort of almost mentor you through that. Like, you know, yeah, you take the reins, but here's how we can support you. I think that's great. And one thing we do here at our church, I'm sure you guys do this as well. The way things happen, like if someone has an idea, it's always filtered through our mission and vision of the church. So if it aligns with what the direction we're trying to go, we're gonna put weight behind that, and we're gonna try to, you know, help foster that growth and see what happens. I mean, we're not like, you know, in my opinion, I don't know, I don't speak for everybody at my church, but in my opinion, no ministry that, no thing we do is this like sacred thing that can never be touched. Like, I'm always open for new ideas or stopping something, starting something else. You know, but again, it, for us, it always filters through our mission, connecting people to Jesus. And then, you know, our vision of like, well, how do we do that? So,
well, Ryan, did you have any other thoughts here you want to leave us with, or Scott?
I was going to ask like what your hopes and dreams are for the future of Next Gen, like the program itself, but I think you explained a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can put a little more flesh on it. I mean, my hope, and this is something we're going to be exploring, partnering with Refocus Ministry, which is helmed by Christina Emery out of the Great Lakes Conference. So she's a pastor in the Great Lakes Conference. And then she's also there. She works for the conference as the director of intergenerational discipleship, I think is the name. So it's sort of like me in the Great Lakes, kind of, but more broadly focused. And she, her whole ministry refocuses on intergenerational discipleship, which is heavily about, you know, engaging, especially young people in the life of the church. So I'm going to be working with her, doing a training cohort with her. And then my hope would be to just work more directly and practically with churches and staffs and boards, not just in saying, find your own people, but saying, hey, let's sit down over the course of months and talk together about developing an intergenerational culture within your church, tending the soil out of which then, you know, the next generation will come, right? that's kind of how I envision my role developing. I would love to just be working in a free, like, consultation kind of way, free in the sense I'm already getting paid by the Atlantic Conference. So, doing that kind of ground level work and not just going on a podcast and listing all the things that we're dropping the ball in, but saying, okay, let's sit down and really dig in and talk and work through this and get better at it. We're just like, we have this great, I don't want to say resource, because again, they're not a means to an end, but we have this next generation, and they're at risk of dying on the vine. So let's not let that happen.
Are there, you mentioned Christina Embry, are there other ministries like NextGen in the other conferences? Are you aware?
I don't believe so. I mean, so I think, like, Susquehanna Conference, I know, has like a fund, like a, what would that, like an, not an endowment, but like a fund to go towards like internships and things like that. They don't necessarily have a corollary to me that's facilitating that stuff, but that could, happen. I know there's been pitches floated at the, like, leadership council level of like having a more cohesive kind of thing across the whole denomination that's working in this capacity. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know yet, but who cares? We're in the Atlantic Conference, right? I mean,
Wow.
This is our churches,
We
man.
just
We're
lost
here.
like 20 subscribers.
I know, I say that knowing that it's like there's probably like a joke, or not a joke, but like a preconceived kind of, like, a lot of stuff happens in the Atlantic Conference. We're close to, like, I'm sure if you're listening, you're from like the Pacific or the Southeast or the Midwest. You're like, there they go again. Which I totally understand. I got to drive to Messiah for an event again, So I'm being totally facetious, but you can edit it out if you want to.
But yeah, we do pull a lot of people over towards us in the Susquehanna and Atlanta conferences for sure. Someone called Lancaster Mecca the other day as it relates to the Brethren in Christ.
I mean, I guess from literally
Wow.
from a
It
historical
was a joke, but
standpoint,
yeah.
I guess that's true. As far as I know, Lancaster's Mecca for like the whole world, right? Not just the BIC. Like,
Oh,
isn't,
yeah.
I
Mecca for
mean,
outlet shopping.
Mecca for outlet shopping.
Yeah.
I mean, if
I am so
gets
offended
on the
right
list
now
of,
because I live in Lancaster.
no, let's pile on one. If Lititz gets on one more top 10 cute small town in America lists, I mean,
There you go.
we're going to just rename it New Jerusalem and be done with it. I
All
mean,
right.
wait, one
Oh,
more.
man. Oh, goodness. Well, man, Ryan, it's so good to have you on again, man. You make me laugh a lot. I love it. It's good. It's good. Laughter is healthy. So, hey, huh?
It's funny. Yeah, laughter is healthy. That is true.
And as we've been talking about, chaos can be healthy as well. Man, thanks so much for bringing some of that perspective on there, man. It's the Next Gen Ministry is not just a it's not just an initiative. It's not just a program. Really, it's a mindset that all of us in our churches need to have to say, well, I'm gonna kind of go off on a little bit of a tangent, but I'll connect it here in a second. We talk about evangelizing the whole world. You know, hey, this place has been reached. So even if we accomplished going to every country, every town, every whatever, let's say we did it, accomplished reaching with the gospel to the entire world. In 20 years, that's not going to matter unless we are continuing to preach that gospel and having leaders come up and it take our place. Like it reaching the world for Christ is, yes, that is what we want to see. But in order for that to matter long term, we need to also dig deep and dig the roots in and continue to grow new leaders. And that's going to take embracing some chaos. So, Ryan, thanks so much for your vision in changing a paradigm and for how it can challenge us as pastors and how it can hopefully inspire those who are not pastors, but who are looking for that next step that they feel maybe God is calling them to, but maybe haven't felt empowered to take that step yet. So thanks for that.
Yeah, that was a good word, that 20 years thing. Don't be surprised if you hear that at Atlantic Conference in March. The wise man named Ryan said.
Wise man named Ryan. Awesome.
Good. Yeah.
Scott, Ryan, you guys got anything else?
Nope, I'm good. Thanks.
All right, let's wrap it up. Let's call it a day. Guys, thanks so much for joining us on the Bic Life podcast this month. We will see you next time. If you have any suggestions for things you'd like to hear us talk about on the podcast, please feel free to reach out to us at biclifepodcast@gmail.com. And if you have any questions for Ryan Cagno about Next Gen Ministries, or if you're listening from another conference, you're like, hey, something like this would be really awesome in our conference, let's get some conversation started. You can also reach out to us at biclifepodcast@gmail.com. We'll get you in touch and we can make those conversations happen. So Ryan, thanks for joining us. Scott, good to see you again. And we'll catch you all next time.
Thanks for listening to the BIC Life Podcast. Brethren in Christ churches exist to follow Jesus, serve others, and make disciples. If you're looking for more information about the BIC denomination, or if you're looking for one of our local churches, head over to bicus.org. And if you'd like to get in touch with us at the podcast, you can do so by emailing us at biclifepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.